Welcome to the Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this May the 6th on the West Coast, now May the 7th on the East Coast, and in the Central Time Zone. We'd like to welcome all those listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network, and I'm sure you're going to enjoy tonight's show. Before bringing our guest and my co-host Jim Murray on board, just like to comment on how the story of the certificate of live birth is sort of morphing like a kaleidoscope alongside the story of the capture and killing or murder, do you want to call it, and the sea burial of Osama bin Laden. And what is really funny about this now, this is the third time he's allegedly been proclaimed to be dead. Now, two separate accounts, one which occurred in 2001, others that occurred in between, but always referring back to 2001 up to about 2006, when the former prime minister of Pakistan, Benazir Bhutto, said that, and she named an individual with the first name Omar, sounded like she said Omar Sheikh, had murdered Osama bin Laden. So we hear this story, we hear lots of different stories, that he was getting kidney dialysis and using a dialysis machine from the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota. So there are a lot of details about that. And he allegedly passed away in the presence of some CIA agents, probably who had to get rid of him then anyway. So was it really kidney problems or was it a hit? Nevertheless, while we had May Day, we had the royal wedding going on and all the hoopla in England. And then we had a space launch that was supposed to have occurred. And for some reason that was canceled, and about a half a million spectators were thoroughly disappointed and angered by that. And then we had this news from the no-legged Mac Daddy that, and this was to make him a hero, of course, that Osama bin Laden had been captured, killed, and buried at sea. And I suppose if you could imagine what bin Laden was doing if he had been alive, he was probably humming this tune.
Let's go home. your spell. Lord, I'm free. I'm free from your spell.
Crusaders featuring Miss Randy Crawford, and that was a live performance from 2003 at the Montreux Jazz Festival in Switzerland. I think that should be the new theme song for the demise, the third demise of Osama bin Laden, don't you? Well, I'm going to bring tonight's guest on board, my co-host, every Friday night. And he is a scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher. And I'm sure he has an opinion about this event and certainly my selection of this song. Welcome back to Evident Footprints, my co-host, Mr. Jim Murray. Jim, welcome.
Thank you, Don. How are you this evening?
Oh, I'm chipper. What can I say? How about yourself?
Well, actually, I'm on the tired side, to be real frank about it. You know, I got back this morning, well, I should say at this point it would be yesterday morning, at 2 a.m. from a pretty long and grueling trip. And I have to tell you that the airlines were the worst of the entire thing. I mean, it's just amazing to me how pathetic the scheduling is, the service. You you know, the size of the planes. I mean, if they make those darn things any smaller, you know, you might as well be out on the wing. It's really amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, other than that, I guess I'm okay. Just felt like ranting and raving a little bit.
Well, didn't the lyrics to the song sort of describe this situation that we experienced over the past couple of days in a sort of crazy kind of way?
Well, I was never overly thrilled with the guy to begin with, so I don't, you know, have any feelings in that direction. For me, the thrill was gone a long time ago. But the things that you mentioned, I think it was before you played the song, are much more prevalent in terms of getting a rise out of me. The most mysterious and thoroughly suspicious, I don't care how you cut it, aspect of this entire Bin Laden adventure is the fact that they buried him at sea. I mean, it just covers such a multitude of potential sins, and there's no reason for it. None whatsoever. I don't care what excuse comes out of Washington or wherever it comes out of. It just doesn't make a bit of sense. You know, you go through all that trouble for all these years, and then what do you really have to go by? Hearsay. I mean, it's just rubbish.
Yes.
I just don't buy it. And you know what's interesting? I'll tell you what's really interesting, because I didn't expect this at all. On my trip, I was in about four or five different states. And because it was kind of a work-slash-pleasure situation, I actually went out a couple of times and mingled, which I don't normally have the chance to do in the course of my regular day. I was in nightclubs, I was in bars, and I was in public places. And I talked to people, which I'm not shy about. And you would be surprised, because I sure was, how many Americans don't buy this garbage. I mean, there's a lot of them who will buy anything that comes across the airwaves. But when you get out there and actually talk to people, it was amazing to me. They all came out with stuff like, nah, there's something wrong. It's fishy. I don't buy it. Where's the body? You know, all this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like they were ranting and raving in an angry fashion. It's just they made the remark earnestly and in passing, and the general feeling that you get from the exchange is that, you know, they're just chalking it up to another, how to say this politely on the air, another truckload of government garbage.
Mm-hmm. You really meant to say garbage?
You know exactly what I wanted to say.
I was reading your mind. I think most of the listening audience was too. In fact, they'd probably say it for you. You know, I spent 2 days this week, Jim, Tuesday and Thursday, going into a piece called Jack Parsons and the Curious Origins of the American Space Program. And, of course, Jack Parsons, if you're familiar with him, was a self-taught scientist who actually excelled in the field of rocket design and propellants. And he was developing a rocket and did develop a rocket and some new types of fuels to power the rockets that had not been used before. And he was responsible in the creation of JPL, Aerojet, which was a company that was making parts for jet airplanes, and which, you know, his invention contributed tremendously to. And then he was sort of scrubbed from the records. And I found it rather interesting because He was involved with Aleister Crowley, or Crowley, as he likes to call himself. I've been calling him Crowley. Crowley.
That's what I always call him.
Yeah. Crowley actually inspired him. And he eventually, as the story's unfolding, got involved with a church in Pasadena, California, one that he founded. And so there was a lot of really crazy stuff going on. Parsons was eventually murdered, I'm sure, although he was reported to have died of an accident dropping something. Now, the laboratory he was working in, which was like his garage, which had apartments above it, blew up without really injuring anyone upstairs. They claim there was some damage to some furniture, a piano leg on a grand piano, and some things like coffee tables were strewn around. But none of those tenants in the apartments up above, of which there were four, were injured. But the guy is blown to smithereens. His arm is blown off. His other arm has multiple fractures. And they describe him in the newspaper and in the police reports as directing traffic when the rescue squad gets there. I mean, it's insane what they published, and the fact that the Pasadena police ended up dropping an investigation. Now, without going into too much of it, because I'm covering this, it's amazing how Satanism and these offshoot cults, a very powerful cult, in fact, in Pasadena, California, were involved with the development, design, and production of these rocket ships. And they claim that Parsons had tore a hole in the time-space continuum during some of these rocket tests. And this enabled entities to come here to our planet. It opened a portal, if you will, over California. This is pretty far out stuff. Now, this is alleged to possibly have happened at Area 51. I don't know that was for certain. It could be Area 51 resulted in something that existed prior to that structure being built. But I started covering this, and everywhere I look, everything I'm investigating eventually leads to the space program. Do you have any comments on that? Because I know you've been doing your own research with some of the particular programs that were run, let's say, in the 60s and 70s.
Well, the only comment I have about it, you know, in general, because I really don't spend a whole lot of time, you know, in the investigation of space, my interests are much more grounded, you might say. Mm-hmm. But I did come across something that's really interesting. I bought a book. My original intention was to take it on the trip, and I did, but to be real honest with you, I never had a chance to read it while I was on the trip. I read more of it before I left, actually. But anyway, it's an interesting book because it's a synopsis. It's almost like a reader. It's a synopsis of a whole bunch of books on a myriad of interesting subjects, and it's a clever way of advertising, actually, because you get a taste of the different books, and then they give you the information of where to get the book, you know, which is kind of cool, and it's easy reading, and it's on various subjects. But anyway, what surprised me was this one book called Dark Mission, The Secret History of NASA. And one of the anecdotes that they use as an excerpt from that book, which is in this book, has to do with the Apollo 11 mission. And now, I know there's all kinds of stories about whether we actually landed on the moon or not, and you know, whether that was just another government hoax or whatever. But this thing has a certain amount of credibility to it only because of the strangeness in which the story is told. I can only paraphrase it. I mean, I don't have time to go get the book and read it, but basically what the story says is that on the return leg of the mission, that the leader of the, and I think this actually was JPL where this happened. It was not the main, it was not one of the main NASA complexes like in Texas or in Florida someplace. It was a more unusual one. But anyway, in this particular establishment, they had a head man, and I don't remember his name. We'll just call him Jack. And, of course, everybody knew who he was. And in the middle of the return voyage, this leader guy, the head man, Jack, brings a very strangely dressed man right into the main control room, and he's parading him around and actually introducing him to people. Now, according to this write-up, the guy was very oddly dressed. He was very shabby looking. He had either a range coat on or some kind of a raincoat, you know, like you would see on the rendition of an agent, you know, wearing a coat, but
like a trench coat, you mean?
Like a trench coat, exactly. And some sort of hat, but he was he's very shabby, unshaven, and had on really unusual shoes or some kind of strange footwear. I don't remember exactly, but the main thing was that the guy was bringing him around, introducing him to the key operators at different posts. And every time he introduced him to somebody, this guy handed out a miniature version of the metallicized flag that they supposedly left on the moon. And with that, a flyer. And the flyer basically said that the entire moon mission was a ruse and that the actual thing had been filmed in a studio somewhere in Nevada. Now, almost everybody who was involved with the mission at that time thought it was totally insane because they were involved in actually bringing the guys back and going through all this stuff. And to them, it was all very real. So 99% of these people just took and chucked the flyer. But the guy who was writing the story says that it wasn't really until years later when all the skepticism about that particular accomplishment arose that he even reflected on the oddity of this happening. And his feeling was that the whole effort with this weird guy was actually to implant a certain amount of subliminal doubt or concerns or something of that sort early on. I mean, it couldn't have been any earlier if the mission was actually in progress while this occurred. And if that, in fact, was the case, there's no way that the head guy at this, I think it was JPL, establishment, could not have been aware of what was going on, considering the fact that he was supposedly in charge of that leg of the mission. It's just so absolutely odd that I made notes in the margin of the book, you know, to definitely get a copy of the real book, because supposedly it goes into all kinds of oddities involving NASA, including the suppression of information. But here's the clincher of the whole thing. According to the party who wrote this excerpt, in the bylaws of NASA, Even though it's called a so-called a civilian space administration, it says very clearly, and he says he's going to include copies of it, or has included copies of the actual charter of the space administration in the book. And it says right in the charter that their primary function is to gather information concerning space, extraterrestrials, and other planets, and to categorize and suppress any volatile information from ever reaching the public. It's actually right in their charter, for God's sake.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that rather interesting because here's another thing that I can personally vouch for. Years ago, when I was first in starting the Dynaflux project, and I was involved with a guy who had been a banker in New York. He's a pretty honest fellow, and he wanted to try to get funding directly from I can't remember the name of the organization now, but it's a research organization associated with utilities companies. You actually knew the name of it because I told you this once before. But anyway, the point is that he pulled up their charter because he wanted to see what they were all about. And the amazing thing is that right in the charter it says no funding will ever be issued for over-unity devices, to assist in the development of over-unity devices. Now, if they didn't believe there was such a thing, why the heck would it be in the charter?
That's a very good point. That's a fantastic point.
Those two things are pretty amazing.
Yeah, it was in there to suppress inventions or to give them sort of legal recourse in case somebody came out with something. Don't challenge their metering system. You know, we've been over that 1,000 times, you and I, on this show. Well, something you're pointing out, you know, there's the video of the light bar crashing on the studio floor as Neil Armstrong is making his declaration, one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. And he's stepping down the ladder and that whole light bar collapses on the floor and they have to do it over again. Now, why would somebody take the time to release that? I've said on this show that I feel we've been to Mars prior to ever going to the moon. I know we've been to the moon, but not on the day they said we did. I'm inclined to think that that was a hoax, but they went later on. And
that could very well be, because one of the other things that this book talks about is the fact that when they did go, and he's emphatic that they did, by the way, he said that what they found on the moon was so devastating to the paradigm or the belief structure, even of the guys who went there, that it was just overwhelming. And I don't know exactly what that means, but it certainly implies that it must have something to do with a prior civilization, artifacts, abandoned spacecraft, something of that magnitude. It certainly wasn't that they found, a rock with some worms on it.
I would say all of what you just mentioned and more, and likely they were warned to stay off the moon. And this squabbling has been going on for a number of years anyway, and very recently. You could say it's going on right now. So
who's squabbling with whom?
Well, there are obviously those from points beyond that have their own bases up there. They have mining operations. There are, I'm told, over 700 different structures built on the surface of the moon. There are attempts to generate an atmosphere more than the one that's there. There is an atmosphere. And you notice the flag that they put up on the moon. That thing
right,
opened
right.
up like a piece of oak driftwood. You know, it didn't move. Or if they moved it, they moved it in the studio. Too many things. The anomalies of the dust that would have been catapulted into the atmosphere when they landed. And you see a perfectly clean, what would you call them? The pads, the landing pads, perfectly clean and no dust anywhere. And these guys are hopping around and they're just making footprints in the surface, if you recall that.
I recall it quite well, actually. I watched it on TV.
Mm-hmm. Then there are some photographs and videos that show reflections in the visors of their space helmets, hinting that there are craft there. There are recordings of conversation. Now, if this is all faked, and it's pretty easy to fake this stuff, trust me, they go to great lengths to fake photographs and videos, then what is the point of doing it other than to just create these things to talk about? Because eventually somebody's going to spot all of these anomalies in the pictures that they show us. I think it's intended really first to sell the fact that they went there in 1969, July of 1969. And then what you're talking about now, can you be more specific about Apollo 11 other than what you've already shared with us?
In what respect?
As to what you think went on, or, you know, what is proclaimed to have occurred.
Well, I mean, the whole episode that I just related is so bizarre. I mean, that would be like, you know, that would be like the guys who were in the Manhattan Project during World War II, and all of a sudden some weird guy comes in with the, you know, with the lead band and starts handing out folders that says, you know, the A-bomb will never go off or this or that or whatever. I mean, just the oddity of the fact that it was done in concert with the head of the project is really off the wall.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know exactly what something like that would ever accomplish, you know, except to be remembered as a really bizarre occasion. But what I remember the best, quite honestly and personally, about the landing on the moon episode, I was dating a girl at the time who had a summer house up in upstate New York. And she and I and her parents were up there for the weekend when this happened, or at least over the time period when this happened, and we watched it on TV together. And I remember perfectly clearly sitting on the floor with my back up against one of the chairs so I could be a little closer to the TV, and watching the whole event of the guy stepping down and this and that. And of course, two astronauts got off the lander vehicle, and one remained inside. If I remember correctly, there were three guys who actually went to the surface of the moon. In the first landing episode, only two got out. Is that how you recall it?
Yes.
Okay, fine. So here's the deal. One guy goes over and plants the flag and does all this other stuff, and the other guy's filming him with some kind of a camera, and that's the image that you're seeing. They didn't put the camera on a tripod,
mm-hmm.
and then both guys get in front of it.
So who's taking the picture?
Well, no, that's the point. Mm-hmm. What I was about to say was, all of a sudden, there was a third guy. But it was only there for like a second. And I said to the young lady, I said, wait a minute, who the heck is that? And I remember seeing it so clearly because I was totally blown away by it. And they were a good distance from the camera. If they had set it up on a tripod, you would have seen the guy walking into the shot, you know, from the side.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what happened. There was somebody holding the camera, pointing it at the other fellow, and all of a sudden, it was almost like there was another astronaut there, but he was not intended to be in the frame. And all of a sudden, just for a second, you saw a part of him on the corner of the picture, and then the camera nudged back out, and I said, wait a minute, who the heck was that? I said, there's only three guys. You know, and one guy's supposedly still in the ship. And I scoured, you know, the reruns and everything looking for that or looking for some explanation for that, and I never heard it or found it again. But that was the main oddity about that mission that I remember.
Yeah, I recall the two guys jumping around sort of, going over to moon rocks and taking pictures of the moon rocks, but there were numerous shots of two people there in different places. So that tripod wasn't moving around on its own. If they're alleging that someone set up a tripod. I mean, it's clear. It's clear that there's a hoax about some aspect of it. Now, there's also the charge that whenever there's an event that occurs, let's say, at what used to be called Cape Canaveral, and they now call it the Kennedy Space Center, there's, let's say, a twin event going on at Edwards Air Force Base, and that the Florida program is basically a cover for what would be going on the West Coast. And the real mission is the one leaving Edwards Air Force Base. The other one is just for public relations. Have you heard anything about that?
No, but I can tell you one thing. If that were true, that would be a really, really expensive demurrage because, to launch an entire second vehicle with all of the fuel and all of the, you know, all of the other instrumentalities and everything else that's associated with a launch, it would just be astronomically expensive. Have you actually heard something about that? I mean, that's pretty...
Mm-hmm. On numerous occasions, and this is for many years I've heard this. So imagine then if Parsons did tear open a hole in the time-space continuum. What they're saying is that there's an energy portal, some sort of vortex that leads elsewhere, maybe to Mars, for example, and that they're using a different kind of ship because the space shuttle wouldn't make it there. Not the space shuttle that we've seen with these heat shields and glue coming apart. That is such a ridiculous story, that whole thing. They're in deep space. They've already gone into deep space. So we can presume that in the early 60s, likely about 1962, they went to Mars, and they discovered a portal. And I would submit that it would have been the one created by the research that Jack Parsons was doing. What's really interesting, Jim, is this guy was destroyed financially, and they made sure that they disrupted his personal life as well. His wife left him to take off with L. Ron Hubbard, the founder of Scientology. And I'm going to be getting into that as I share the story with my listening audience next Tuesday. But to make a long story short, there's all kinds of evil going on in this as well. And it's a recurring theme with the space program. It's a recurring theme with certain branches of the military. And so they have, and the issue of aliens. This is the, you know, we're talking about the same time frame, but they've also hidden the older history of alien visitation here. I'm not talking about biblical times. You can go into the late 1800s, and there were numerous sightings, numerous events, remarkable events.
I agree with you 100%. When I was working with Ivan Sanderson during my college days at Newark College of Engineering, one of the things I used to love to do was to drive out to Columbia, New Jersey, which of course is all the way over at the Delaware Water Gap. It's on the other side of the state. And that's where he had his headquarters. And the files that he had available were just mind-boggling. And I used to just go out there and sometimes spend the whole weekend in the guest house just reading through some of the stuff that that he had accumulated. And one of the things that I read, which I thought was totally amazing, and as a matter of fact, I think it showed up in one of his books later on, was this story about the mystery airship that was seen in the 1860s. It was sometime around the time of the Civil War. And it was something like a big dirigible, but it didn't appear to be a balloon. It just appeared to be a levitating craft. And it had a balcony around the side of it, and little short people were seen standing on the balcony waving. And this thing was at very low altitudes, like, you know, 150, 200 feet. It wasn't, you know, way up in the sky somewhere. And apparently this thing cruised all over the place, taking photographs, and it was in turn photographed also. And then there was another one where there was a crash. And I found that this was really exciting because whatever the thing was that crashed had alien occupants, and it was supposedly notarized as such. And they were buried in the corner of some churchyard somewhere. There was a big local debate about whether they could do this or not with these people because they didn't know if they were Christians or not. And it's so off the wall that it's probably for real. But anyway, they buried them, and they knew the location of the grave. And then years later, there were people who wanted to exhume that grave to examine these so-called alien corpses. And they were continuously denied legal permission to exhume the bodies. So there's all kinds of stuff that has happened, which certainly indicates that there's more going on than meets the eye, and there has been for centuries. So, you know, the real question is, who authorizes the blanket cover-up of this stuff? I mean, it's got to be somebody that's got a heck of a lot of power when you stop and think of it, because the same story is true in Europe, it's true in other countries, even in South America. South America has one of the greatest histories of UFO incidences of almost any other country, which is in itself is interesting.
Even Africa, what? Jim. Even Africa.
So something's definitely going on, and it has been for quite some time. There's no question about it.
Yes. regarding the moon, they discovered a craft there that was about a mile long and had crashed a number of years ago. And they found the bodies of the occupants of that craft in a sort of a catatonic state in what you could call sort of tubes, like you see in some of the movies, like Alien, for example.
Like in suspended animation or something?
Yes. And they removed a female from her little
cocoon,
if you want to call it that. Yeah. What do you call something that? They did an autopsy, and there is a film of this. Now, this is not a phony YouTube video. This is actually a true event. How it got out, I don't know, but it's intended to fuel the dialectical arguments that occur. But I happen to know that craft is still up there,
if it's a mile long, I don't know where else it would be.
Mm-hmm.
You don't just move it.
Yeah, and it was likely a group that had escaped oppression on their planet, and they encountered some difficulty and crashed there. But they were in they had to have been traveling, that they were all basically in this suspended animation, and we know that the one that they did the autopsy on died. That's obvious from the film. But one wonders how many others they may have taken from there, how many they may have brought back to the Earth. Sort of oriental looking, if you will. Darker skin. I don't know if you would call it tanned or maybe an off color, but certainly darker, and the almond shaped eyes, and certainly even they showed shots of some of the gauges, some of the electronic equipment there. So, if this craft, which may have crashed as long ago as 500 years ago, was found on the moon, and that technology existed, certainly where we are today doesn't compare to someone who 500 years ago could travel across the galaxy, many, many light years away from their home planet. I mean, it's staggering to consider that's some of what's up there on the moon. And at some point, they did retrieve at least one of the bodies, and they filmed it. And that is on YouTube as well. So,
well, what's it called? I would love to look at it.
Oh, I'd have to go searching, but I'm sure one could. You could say alien moon autopsy or moon autopsy might bring it up. Mile long ship. I'm sure the jackboots now are scrambling to scrub the site, but there were.
Well, that's what I was just thinking, and now that you brought it up, I'll never see it. You know.
Oh no, I was about to say there were other copies besides on YouTube. So it's posted on the internet and other places as well. I think it's a worthwhile topic just to bring that up, because these stories, although for some they seem like science fiction. You look at weather today. You look at many of the strange events that are occurring around the planet. People are waking up to the fact that this stuff isn't all nonsense. If it is, they just came up with all these developments technologically in the past 2 or 3 years. They've really gone out of their way to try to suppress the information. You know, they'll put out a video talking about the realities of space, and then they'll call everything that comes from space demons. Well, that's absurd. There are enough demons down here already that we don't need them coming from space. But there are certainly a lot of demons, and they interact with negative beings. There's no doubt about that. But they try to debunk the whole thing using people like Dr. J. Allen Hynek, who was nothing but a professional debunker for the government throughout his career, as someone who really understood and really knew the truth, and he came to the conclusion that it was demons. Well, the only conclusion I can draw on that, based on that statement, is that he himself was a demon. If he has to say that someone's picture, someone's photograph of a flying saucer that landed on their property was really swamp gas. I mean, give me a break. Give us all a break on that one. So they've been lying about this forever. And the intent is to just keep people from being aware of what's really going on. Just a little bit of simple logic shows that all these possibilities can't exist simultaneously. And they're the ones coming out with all the stories. So any comment you'd like to make in that regard is welcome.
Well, I mean, I have the feeling, and I have had it for a while, that there's some kind of an escalation going on that is tending towards a crescendo. And I'm wondering, I mean, I'm as curious about all this gibberish about 2012 as the next person is, but one of the things that would certainly change the planet and rock the paradigms, the existing paradigms, you know, beyond recovery, would be the absolute demonstration of the existence of extraterrestrials and the fact that they are actually here among us and have been for centuries. I can't think of anything, with the possible exception of a polar shift accompanied by, you know, 4-mile-high tidal waves and winds of 1,500 miles an hour, those are the only two things I can think of which would really mark the beginning of some kind of a new epoch. Of course, if the calamity of the pole shifts occurs, very few of us are going to be around, you know, to discuss it. There will be survivors, of course. That I'm ignoring that possible scenario only because the outcome is rather bleak. But if you look at it from the other point of view, if something like that happened that revealed alien cultures, alien presence here and all of that kind of stuff, I mean, that would literally blow the minds of so many people, not necessarily in the panicky mode that the government always paints the picture, but, you know, just stop and think about the impact on culture, the impact on religion, the impact on philosophy, the impact on the personal mental musings of people who from time to time, even if they're in the vegetative state, can't help but wonder if we're alone or not, and what would it mean if we weren't, you know, all those things. And I definitely have noticed an increase or an escalation of events that seem to be pointing in the direction of some massive revelation. And Here's the interesting thing that I really am curious about, and I'd love to hear your response to it. If such a revelation were to actually occur, would it be planned by governments around the world to orchestrate it in some time sequence that benefited them, or would it be planned by extraterrestrials themselves because they would like to bring an end to this ridiculous extension of the Dark Ages that we're living in.
You ready for my comment?
Absolutely. Always have been.
Okay. First of all, I would say that those that pose as the rulers of this planet are themselves puppets to some extent. And they have been promised certain things. Of course, you're witnessing the fulfillment of those promises. But all the promises haven't been fulfilled. And, you know, some have asked the question, why does it go so slowly and so deliberately if they have all of this power or all of this technology? Well, it's not as simple. We're not hearing all the truth about what they're up against on a galactic scale. There are those that consider this whole cabal, whether you want to say it's reptilians and grays controlling the Illuminati, who control the corporations and the governments and their minions, and whose desire is to absolutely control everyone. If they're still striving for that, then they don't really have control. It's all based on illusion. So what is really going on behind the scenes has everything to do with what's going on in space and what's coming here from space. There is no doubt about that. So there's nothing the government can tell us about an invasion. I mean, this planet is at war, war that they create. The average person isn't creating this war. The average person isn't seeking to experience the war, at least on a conscious level. Those who are convinced that they're protecting a country that they serve in the military, wherever it is on the planet, are, even if they're awake to what's really going on, they're aiding and abetting in this corrupt activity, this evil activity. So on a multiplicity of dimensions and levels, there's this interaction with the dark side or the negative side or the evil side of the spirit world. And those entities that can't inhabit a body are happy to join in if one is provided. And they are drawn towards the types of energy that are destructive. We've proven this in photographs that we've studied, that these entities even cling to the bodies of some of these beings, posing as presidents and vice presidents and all the titles you want to give people in the government. They know this. They know we're telling the truth about this. And so do those who have studied this for some time. You can only come to the conclusion that evil is what it is. Doesn't matter if it's a demon or it's a physical being or a shapeshifter or some being from another planet. So the reality, how they're going to try to create some scenario is ridiculous. Because, Jim, I'm aware of this. I'm not freaking out over it. And other people I know who are aware of it aren't freaking out. Now, they do experience some rather anomalous things, like recordings changing every time you play them back. There's a different voice and something else is occurring on the tape, and that sounds insane. Or let's say it's a digital recording. I suppose you can layer digital audio in a loop that the first time you play it, when it reaches the end of the loop and it goes back, it seeks another level. That's quite possible that they're using that technology. I recently talked to someone who's experiencing that very phenomenon. And then on another hand, where I know that there were at least two reptilian beings in the presence of some music that was recorded, that music we're talking about a vocal with a pre-recorded accompaniment. The accompaniment is missing from the recording, even though all of the sound was taken from the same source. The music is missing. And in one example, the voice is missing. Now, that wouldn't occur unless it had been manipulated somehow. And it is possible through thought or intention or even on a multidimensional scale to influence something to be other than what it is, or at least make it appear to be what it is. So when they hoodwink the public, it's always based on fear, isn't it? Their methodology is fear-based. So we can expect anything to cause fear, or the opposite extreme, something that is definitely evil being presented to us as if it's sacred or holy. And I know you're chomping at the bit to respond, so go ahead.
No, I'm not chomping, but I was only going to say, and we definitely have both categories already.
Yes.
I mean, we've got a certain religious organization, so-called, which is actually masking some really wicked activity. And then on the other hand, you've got the obvious, which doesn't even attempt to hide itself. It's just out there doing its thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we got both already. And I often fantasize, or maybe that's not really the right term, but I often run through the mental gamut of what it would be like to expunge the whole bloody mess of them off this world, just how it would change. And I really don't have an answer, but at one point, I have the feeling that there would be a period of peace and prosperity, and then it would start slowly back toward the same disgusting condition, but it would probably take a few hundred years or a thousand years to achieve. And I think that that's pretty predictable, because there are certain human beings that are just flawed when it comes to that. You know, they can't help but want to control somebody else. They can't help but want to have something by doing as little as possible to obtain it. And those are the seeds of the philosophy that got us to where we are now.
Yeah, don't you find...
I have a friend in New York who is very much involved with Reich's work, and he's got a really deep understanding of psychology and the human mind and whatnot. And I was talking to him about this very thing not so long ago. And I said to him, what do you think is the real basis on a psychological level, the mechanism, if you will, that propels these types of individuals towards the need to control others and to control everything? Because it's clearly a mania of some sort. And actually, his answer surprised me. He said it's because those people themselves are driven by fear. And it's something happened in their life, like, for instance, they were ostracized or otherwise picked upon in their childhood, or, you know, possibly corporally punished, you know, to an excessive degree, whatever the stimulus might have been. And they came to the realization that they were insecure as a result of this and fearful of others. And their response to that was to move in the opposite direction, which means that the only way they would feel safe throughout all of their existence would be to be in a position where they could control and subdue others so that similar things couldn't happen to them again. And, of course, the more successful they are in these endeavors, and I'm sure they start off small, it causes their mania to escalate until they become just thoroughly obsessed, and they don't care what they have to do to just continue the process, and they want to take it to greater and greater levels. And, of course, then it's inevitable that birds of a feather flock together. All they got to do is start meeting other yo-yos that are as perverted as they are, and pretty soon you got a club, and the club has clout.
And, well, it seems, Jim, that those that seek to control others can't control themselves, and the opposite would be those that love others love themselves. So, you have that dichotomy right there. What other conclusion could you draw?
The only other conclusion you can draw is that true evil is a sickness. It isn't a question. You don't really need to have a true demonic being orchestrating this stuff. It's a failed human condition, which unfortunately can only lead to anguish and negativity. It can't go the other way. By its very nature, it can't go the other way.
Mm-hmm. The ufologist, Jacques Vallée, the French ufologist, he said something very profound. He said that these beings, being of an evil nature, and he considered them to be demons at some point, or at least it was alleged. Now, you see, that brings it into the religious arena. The average person doesn't consider a demon to be valid outside of religion. But these are negative entities, regardless of what you want to call them. And they're destructive, and they're evil. And he said they were parasitical. We always describe this group as such. We say they're parasites. They're non-producers, living off the efforts of the producers, the people that create the things. Now, they certainly create situations, but all their creations are involving the act of parasitizing everything else that's living. And everything in to the contrary of the creation and the laws of the universe. Even when I've studied about Jack Parsons and his group, they want to paint the picture that this was some kind of a sex cult, and it likely was, but that was not all it was. Parsons himself at some point labeled himself the Antichrist. He ordained himself the Antichrist and communicated this to Crowley. So when you consider all these things together, they connect. They keep connecting.
Well, sure, I believe that. I mean, you can build a matrix out of any set of individuals or conditions which have similar properties. And that brings me to an interesting thought. I think that if my friend in New York is correct about the mechanism that starts people off in this direction, and it has to do with fear and the need then to dominate and control, once you get a taste of that type of thing and become obsessed by it, I can easily see that your own efforts can further degrade you spiritually to the point where you might in fact become an appealing target for some other kind of entity, perhaps a spiritual one, that enjoys that type of activity and says, hey, here's something that I can get involved with, which will supply me with all kinds of negative feedback for years to come. And just like the pilot fish who latches onto the shark, you know, these entities can then invade the souls of the people who have degraded themselves. I mean, if you look at the pictures of some of these people, I mean, in the real world, they're not normal. I don't care how you label it. There's something wrong with them. I mean, mm-hmm. I actually went through this exercise not that long ago. Somebody sent me an article about that very thing, and there were pictures of some pretty prominent individuals, starting with the Pope, I might add, and going down the list into national politics. And it was just unbelievable how ugly and evil and distorted these people look. And it's not an illusion. I mean, it's right there in black and white. You know, even a homely individual is beautiful compared to some of these monsters. Now, what can possibly explain that type of a digression from normalcy, except something that's really, really evil?
Yes, and we're not even getting into the discussion of the secret societies and the numerology and the symbology and the rituals and the ritual murder and the sacrifices, the satanic sacrifices that occur. This is not made up. There's plenty out there. A lot of research has been done by others in that regard. And there's been a substantial amount of spilling of the beans, if you will. Jim, we're almost out of time. I want to sort of dispel this energy, but allow you to gather your thoughts at the same time to make a closing comment. To sort of wrap all this stuff up and bring us back to reality here, I'm going to feature David Pack and his newest version of Biggest Part of Me.
Make a destiny, baby. All the things I do. what it means to me. Flow like a lazy river.
Album The Secret of Moving On, that was David Pack, and You're the Biggest Part of Me. You know, Jim, that song to me sounded like going through a spiritual car wash, washing away all that dark funk that we were talking about tonight. Any closing comment you'd like to make?
Yeah, actually there is one. You know, my dad was very fond of political cartoons because he said that if they're properly drawn, you know, one image captures the spirit of the message so vividly that it doesn't even need a caption, although a lot of them have captions. And in that light, I'd like to say that the way a lot of this stuff we were talking about tonight presents itself to me, it can be captured in the following image, and I'll have to describe it, obviously. Okay. But let's picture a person cowering in the corner, and what he's cowering from is a mosquito that's approaching him, and the mosquito is holding a gigantic magnifying glass in front of itself. And that in a sense, is exactly the kind of thing we're up against. You know, these vampires, these bloodsuckers, use a magnification of their own importance, power, and worth, you know, to make us cower. But if you look around the side of that magnifying glass, it's just another ugly little varmint that needs to be squashed out of existence. And that's exactly the way we should view the people who are tormenting the majority of us here on Earth. We can't forget or lose sight of the fact that no matter how many of them there are millions more of us, and it's about time that we got our act together and took matters into our own hands to correct the situation. End of story.
Very well said, Jim. I might add from my own perspective that our true power, our true inner power, which comes directly from God, it's greater than any technology they'll ever develop. In fact, all the technology is based on destruction and on fear. And we're the opposite. The way we were created is totally opposite that. And at some point, people are going to have to awaken to that fact and take action. It's as simple as that. Take responsibility. Jim Murray, I appreciate all you had to offer on tonight's show, your wisdom and your insight, and even beyond your scientific acumen, your spiritual maturity and and awareness. I really appreciate it. I'm sure the listening audience does again, and I look forward to your next visit on Evident Footprints next Friday night.
Thank you, Don. I'll sure to be here.
I wish you a good night and a great weekend. Folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com and our regular guest on Friday nights and my co-host, scientist inventor Jim Murray. Special thanks to Windtalkers Radio Network for broadcasting Evident Footprints. Over at BBS Radio tonight, we had Seth Hendrick on the sound. I'd like to thank Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join us next Monday evening when my special guest will be Dr. A. True Ott. In the meantime, I wish you a great weekend, and I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.